So with that, we'll move on to item four, presentation from Brown Armstrong on the audit of December 31st, 2019 financial statements. Henry, I believe you're handling this item or introducing this item.
Yes, good morning, board. Hello, can we hear?
Are we on? Yes, you're clear.
Good morning. Yes, I just want to give a few words on the work that Brown Armstrong did. This year was a challenge, as we all know. The very first day that they were supposed to get started on our audit, we began a shelter-in-place order. So I really appreciate the flexibility on both their team and ours in trying to get this work done and putting a report in front of the board today. That was a very admirable approach. So that's number one. Number two is the work that they do is really for the benefit of the public, for the board, for management. The objective is obviously an expression of an opinion of the financial statements, but in their work along the way, I certainly listen to any recommendations that they have on improvements to internal control, any weaknesses that we can improve on, any corrections to or comparisons to best practices. So I really appreciate their efforts. And with that, I'd like to introduce, I believe, Andy Paulden, partner, and Brooke Baird, manager, are on the line. So I'll turn it over to them.
Welcome, Brown Armstrong. Andy and Brooke, you have the floor.
We believe that their link is to be found. We're trying to find them. And one moment while we try to locate their call-in link.
And this is Gail Stroll. While they're working on that, I did want to I was going to do it after their presentation, but I did want to take a moment and thank Brown Armstrong for working with us through the shelter in place. As Henry just mentioned, they were supposed to be on site when the shelter in place order went into effect. Typically, they come out to our office two times for field work, and this audit round they didn't come out at all. And this is the first time that that has happened, so we were able to accommodate their work and have them do it remotely. And I'd like to thank our IT staff as well as accounting and everyone involved at Sisera who took part in this audit. I think that it's astounding that Brown Armstrong in this new format was able to complete the work and complete it timely. And I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge all of those involved with the 2019 audit. So thank you for that.
Yes, kudos to both Brown Armstrong and to staff. Thank you, Gail.
You're welcome.
So
do we have them back on the line?
Hi, everyone. This is Brooke Baird with Brown Armstrong. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. We were muted.
We were muted. This is Andy. Can everyone hear me as well?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. And Henry and Gail, thank you for those introductory comments and the kudos. But as I'll mention it when I wrap up our presentation today, the significant kudos go to your team. We all got thrown a significant curveball, and you guys, as always, went above and beyond to accommodate our request and accomplish a significant task in a very different format this year. So thank you for that. So with those opening remarks, just for the record, my name is Andy Paulden. I'm a CPA and a partner at Brown Armstrong. And with me on the call is...
Hi, everyone. This is Brooke Baird, the audit manager on your engagement.
And it is our pleasure to be here today to present to you the results of our audit of your December 31, 2019 financial statements. I know that you have our outline that Brooke and I will be addressing and presenting, and we're going to break that up between the both of us so you get an opportunity to hear from both of us. And we're going to go through various items on this agenda or outline, if you will. Please feel free at any point in time to stop us, ask any questions as necessary, and we'd be more than happy to answer them. So with that, I'm just going to dive in and just remind everybody about what the purpose of an audit is, kind of why it is we are engaged by your organization. First and foremost, your organization prepares a set of financial statements whereby you represent or assert to all of the users of those financial statements that the information therein, contained therein, is fairly presented in accordance with GAAP or generally accepted accounting principles. It's our responsibilities as an independent audit firm to conduct an audit engagement pursuant to our professional standards and render a written opinion as to whether or not your assertions and representations are in fact accurate. That opinion then accompanies your financial statements and gives everybody some assurance that someone outside your organization has reviewed your financials and is taking opinion responsibility for them as well. So with kind of that overview or background, if you will, in regards to why we are engaged, I'm going to turn it over to Brooke to go through the audit process, what it is we do and why, and then morph that into a discussion about risk-based approach to our engagement and the areas that we focus on, and then I'll talk about the our deliverables, the opinions and reports that we've issued. So Brooke, please.
Hello, everyone. Item two on our agenda, I'm going to go over a quick summary of our audit process. At the beginning of our audit process, we coordinate annually with Sisera Management to establish our timeline. We use a critical dates list for this purpose. This list was provided to our during our entrance with the audit committee that occurred back in February and details out the tasks that must be accomplished in order for us to reach today our presentation and approval of the financials by the board. This list breaks down the audit process into various stages, including planning, interim, and final field work, and then there's audit wrap-up and drafting. This year, as mentioned before, was a bit different. Due to COVID, we conducted our entire audit remotely. And as discussed with the audit committee during our May 6th audit status update meeting, Sisera Management and staff did a fantastic job. This was definitely very different. As Henry mentioned, the week that we were to start interim was the first week that everyone was on restriction. So we really had to adapt quickly. And with Henry, Gail, and the staff's assistance, things went, you know, smoothly considering everything. Also, what I just mentioned is this year, a new thing that we did was we did have a audit status update meeting with the audit committee midway through the audit, where I gave a brief summary of how interim went, gave an update of where we were at that current week. That week was the week that we started our final fieldwork procedures. And I think that this meeting was very beneficial to both parties, just to make sure that we're in contact and that we're servicing the audit committee and the board. Item number 2B, as part of the audit, we're required to update our understanding of Sisera's internal controls. Typically, under our normal audit procedures, we would meet with members of management and staff to review our prior documentation, and then we would make updates where needed while we were out in the field. This year, Sisera management and staff reviewed our prior year documentation, updated where needed, for any new procedures or policies, and then we verified their changes to our documentation during the course of our audit procedures. Also, as part of this process, we obtained copies of any policies and procedures written that were updated. This is a very important process because we use a risk-based audit approach when auditing. This means we focus on areas that we consider most at risk. To determine these areas, we focus, we take into consideration not only qualitative factors, but also quantitative. Along with this process and our test of internal controls, where we focus on transaction level data, we use these results to tailor our final fieldwork procedures when we are substantiating the line item balances of the financial statements. Item 2C is our confirmation of account balances with independent third parties. We confirm material balances and some immaterial balances with outside third parties. These coordinate with your line items, the financials. Some of these confirmations are investments. On the investment confirmations, not only is it your investment balances, but we also confirm related income, expenses, and pending transactions. We send the investment manager confirmations and custodians the confirmations. We also confirm contributions with plan sponsors. And then as part of our testing of internal controls, we also send out our participant confirms annually. And these go out to a sample of both active and retired members.
Brooke, you might build in, if you're familiar with the case that broke in the last couple of days of the German wire firm that suddenly had $2.1 billion that wasn't there. I think that was all due to a confirmation process where the 2.1 wasn't there. Anyway, if you're familiar with that, you can spend a moment on it describing
I'm not familiar with that, but I can attest to the purpose of confirmations, that it's always best to get balances confirmed with an outside third party, especially if they're knowledgeable, especially if they're in charge of those balances. So we do not sample at Cicera. We send confirmations to all your investment managers. And then once we receive these confirmations, we reconcile them to the custodian, and then we reconcile those to Cicera's records. We try to confirm as many balances with outside third parties because at the end of the day, all parties should be on the same page with regards to balances. So if there are differences, then we proceed through a reconciliation process through whatever the account or whatever the confirmation's confirming. But often confirmations lead to the major red flags because typically if there is an internal issue, the client wouldn't be able to provide adequate support as to the variances. Andy, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, thank you, Brooke. I was going to jump in. I'm not familiar with that issue either, but now you piqued my interest, and I certainly will be educated after we get off the call. But one of the nice things, particularly in your environment, in the 37 Act environment, if you will, we've got some tremendous checks and balances, if you will, from an external perspective as well as an internal perspective. By that, I mean, you've got a custodian who is the overall record keeper, but then you've got your investment managers that are tracking their piece of the pie, for lack of a better term. And then you've got your investment advisor that's kind of overseeing the overall investment portfolio and the strategies, et cetera. And so we confirm with all three of those entities and we compare and contrast. And that's not necessarily true in other types of audits that we do. We may just have the entity and a bank or a financial institution, period, end of story. And so the fact that we've got multiple parties overseeing, which are, this is part of your internal controls, this is a really valuable confirmation process. And as Brooke said, when we see discrepancies between those entities and their responses, that points us in the right direction to figure out what's gone wrong.
Thank you, Andy. Does anyone have any other follow-up questions to that?
Not seeing anyone light up, so.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so item 2D is our interim testing. During our entrance with the audit committee and during our subsequent audit status update meeting that occurred in May, we covered in detail procedures that are performed during both interim and final field work. Interim field work began the week of March 23rd, and during interim field work, we primarily focus our attention on the documentation of internal controls and participant testing and the testing of those controls. In order to complete this year's participant testing, we accessed Cicera's systems through a VPN connection that Henry was able to set us up in. It made everything go very smooth. We were able to complete our testing up to our normal standards. So that was something new that we tried this year and we might be using in future years, especially as it results if there's any exceptions or we have open items after interim. During this time, we are also reviewing any reports issued by your internal audit department. We're interviewing management and staff regarding their knowledge or suspicions of fraud or weaknesses in internal control. We also start our review of investment manager internal controls through our review of the SOC reports. We're starting to set up our analytics. So interim, there's a lot of work to get done. This year, it took us about a week and a half, not our typical week, but we weren't consistently working, and that was due to the COVID pandemic. Item 1E is final fieldwork. We stuck with our normal schedule. Thanks to Sisera management and leadership, we were able to stay right on track. And this was conducted on our normal fieldwork week in May that ran the same as prior year. During final fieldwork, we're wrapping up any outstanding interim procedures. We're substantiating the individual line items on the financial statements. And at this time on agenda item 3, we note the significant audit areas and the scope of our audit work. As said before, we use a risk-based audit approach. That's the item 3A. And then below that are items listed or areas that we spend a considerable amount of time on. These items are covered in detail during the audit committee entrance, the procedures that we go through. But really quick, I want to give you kind of a brief rundown of what we do in these areas. So item 3B is investments and related earnings. This is the majority of your assets. So we spend a considerable amount of time, like Andy said, reconciling custodian, investment manager, and your consultant reports. We send confirmations to all the investment managers, and we also gain access to the custodian records via their online system. As Andy mentioned before, a big part of this is reconciling all these records together to make sure there are not any material differences. We're looking for red flags, anything that looks unusual. And then, of course, we have our materiality procedures. We have our thresholds that we abide to and as to what we're going to look at. Related earnings, you know, we tie these to the custodian and investment manager report. We also look at your securities lending. We're also looking at investment manager SOC reports, their reports on internal controls. We're also looking at audited financials of some of your alternative investment managers. So we have various procedures that we perform. If you have any detailed questions, please let me know. 3C is our analysis of participant data and act. Yes.
Brooke, before you leave B, any comments or observations on, I believe this was the first year with Northern Trust, how they
yes.
performed, how good their reports were, et cetera?
Yeah, you know, we do audit a lot of 1937 Act, our clients. So we do have a lot of experience working with Northern Trust, Standard, or State Street. So Northern Trust, they provide good reports. They have good documentation. In my opinion, everything went smoothly. I know a lot of that has to do with your financial departments, you know, accounting departments, you know, ahead of work before we came in to check their work. Something's different being that you guys transferred over March 1st. There was some reconciliation that we had to do between State Street records and Northern Trust records for those first 2 months of the year on the income and expense side. But other than that, Northern Trust has a real user-friendly online system. So we produce the reports that we know we have to produce, and then we work with Henry on getting anything that's missing. So Northern Trust is probably one of my favorite custodians for online access.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. Brooke had mentioned the first 2 months of the year. We converted from State Street to Northern Trust on March 1st. So those are the 2 months that she's talking about.
Yes, sorry, Gail. Yes, great reminder. So March 1st, so then we had to get the January, February reports. And Henry and his staff were able to help us out a lot with that. Item 3, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Andy. I was just going to jump in real quick. And we've, throughout our practice, we've had numerous instances where clients have changed the custodians. And we realize that one, that's never an easy decision for you, but certainly from an audit perspective, we're wanting to make sure that the transition from your old custodian, your new custodian is handled appropriately. And so that's why we focus significantly on some of the transactions as the conversion is taking place, as Brooke and Gail mentioned. And so we're in tune with that and just make sure that everything comes over. And then once it has come over, that they are preparing and generating accurate reports. And then the final thing I wanted to say on the investments and the related earnings, Brooke talked a lot about the detailed procedures that we perform, kind of one of the wrap-up procedures for the entire audit team, but particularly when it gets to Brooke's and my level and ultimately our technical review level. We step back and look at the overall returns within your portfolio overall, and then within the various investment classes, and we compare and contrast that to what our expectations are in the market, as well as what other 37 acts have, and your peers, if you will, have done, taking into consideration that a significant number are June 30 versus 12/31. But that's kind of our final pass, if you will, that, you know, we've audited the valuation, we've audited the hard earnings realized, and we've looked at the unrealized earnings as well. And does this all make sense? So I just wanted to give you that comfort that there's kind of a final overall analysis, because we realize the significance of the investment portfolio to, and the earnings thereon to your financial reporting and other aspects of your operations. So Brooke, please go ahead, 3C.
Thanks, Andy. 3C is our analysis of participant data and actuarial information. As mentioned before, we select a sample annually of active and retired members, and we send them a confirmation. This is confirming various areas of participant data. And then we also confirm benefit payments for the retirees and contribution amounts for the active members. During interim, we test this data. We do our participant data analysis. We also look at current year terminated participants. And probably about 4 years ago, we started sending out employer payroll testing confirmations. These are confirmations that we send out to your employers to confirm the pensionable payroll items to make sure that the records they're sending you accurately affect or reflect line items that should be considered, payroll items that should be considered pensionable. And then we have our retiree testing where we recalculate benefit amounts. And then we also do deceased retiree testing where we look at individuals that are deceased members, both active and retirees, that were deceased in the current year. And we also review the procedures with regards to our internal control documentation. Actuarial, we review your actuary evaluation annually along with your GASB 67 and GASB 74 reports.
This is Andy. Real quick, Brooke, I'll just jump in here for just a minute. We realize how important participant data is, and not only, you know, it starts with the employers, your plan sponsors, if you will, for them maintaining their accurate database, feeding that to Sacera, and then that is certainly utilized significantly by your actuary. In the good old days, it was predominantly used for funding valuations, but now we've got the external reporting responsibilities for 67, 68, et cetera, that your plan sponsors rely on for their issuance of financial information, and they in turn rely on the work that we have done. And so we're cognizant of not only the accuracy, but the internal controls as it comes, as I said, from the plan sponsors through you and ultimately out to the actuaries. So we beat this area up pretty hard, but for good reason. It's extremely important and drives a lot of the decisions that impact not only your organization, but also the plan sponsors. So tremendous amount of effort in that area. So thank you, Brooke.
And the last two areas of under the three heading are employee and employer contributions. And for this, we send confirmations to your plan sponsors. Once we receive the confirmation back, we reconcile any differences noted, and then we trace these up to your GL. And benefit payments, we obtain support from Sacera, and we also perform additional analytics. So that in summary, brief summary, kind of touches on the areas that we focus on. And to go back up to 2F, the report or report presentation, this is our final step, our presentation to the board for approval of our reports. I'm now going to turn it over to Andy to go through the reports that we are required to issue.
Great. Thank you, Brooke. Before I dive into the deliverables, if you will, as a result of our engagement, I am going to just pause for a moment and see if there's any questions on anything that Brooke and I have presented thus far.
Doesn't appear so. Thank you.
Okay, great. You bet. Thank you. So I'll just jump into these. And so as I mentioned at the outset, Independent Auditor's Report is really the most important deliverable that we provide to your organization. If you look at the CAFR, it begins on page 22 and runs through page 24, and I know I've mentioned it before. The old opinion when I started was one page, three paragraphs, and in the era of simplicity, I guess, or transparency, it's certainly grown above and beyond that. But what I am pleased to report is that we have issued an unmodified or clean opinion, whereby we do opine that your financial statements are fairly presented in accordance with GAAP. That is the highest opinion that an independent audit firm can provide. And as I said, it will accompany your financial statements. But more importantly, congratulations to your organization for preparing accurate financial information pursuant to applicable standards and receiving a clean bill of health. So congratulations to you. That's the most important deliverable that we have. And I'm pleased to present those results to you. We also have, pursuant to our professional standards, standalone reports that are required to be issued as a result of our engagement. Those are typically presented to you in what we refer to as a report to the Board of Retirement and the Audit Committee. And it really focuses on three main reports that we have issued. And the first is titled a required communication to the board pursuant to professional standards. It's statement that this is issued pursuant to statement on auditing standards 114. But to put it in context, we never lose sight of the fact that we are engaged by the board, we report to the board, and we work for the board. And we do that through the audit committee. And obviously the audit committee and the board discharge the day-to-day performance of the engagement to very capable staff. We work with them hand in hand in completing the engagement and presenting to you the ultimate reports. But nonetheless, we're required to provide you a written report, communication, if you will, in regards to any issues that arose during the conduct of the audit. And so that's the purpose of the report. In summary, I will say that there were no issues, disagreements with management, that we are required to report to you pursuant to your fiduciary responsibilities. As Brooke and I have already alluded to, your staff went above and beyond, and we greatly appreciate that. And under some very trying circumstances, we're pleased to report that there were no issues that arose that were required to be reported in that SAS 114 report. So again, congratulations on that. I know I've mentioned previously, but I think it warrants reemphasizing that we follow basically two sets of standards in the conduct of our audit engagements. First, we have the AICPA standards that tells us what we're supposed to do, when we're supposed to do it, how we're supposed to do it. But when we conduct an audit of a governmental entity such as yours, we have to go above and beyond those basic standards, if you will, and follow what are oftentimes referred to as the Yellow Book standards or government auditing standards. Those deal a lot with our professional capabilities, our training of our staff, our review of the staff, our oversight of our staff, just making sure that we're giving you adequate team members that know your business and that we have the competencies, if you will, to conduct your engagement. But it also requires that we look inside your organization and identify whether or not any weaknesses in internal controls existed that either did or may have had a material impact on your financial statements. And we're also obligated to review your compliance with applicable laws and regulations that may have or did in fact have a material impact on your financial statements. So with that background, we have issued that Yellow Book report, and I'm pleased to report to you that there were no weaknesses in internal controls, nor were there any instances of noncompliance with laws and regulations. So again, congratulations on receiving that clean report as well. And the final deliverable that we have is referred to as our agreed upon conditions, but I always like to put this kind of in context also. Our standards allow us or require us to, as we've mentioned throughout the presentation, look at your internal controls, evaluate the strengths and weaknesses. And if we, in fact, identify any weaknesses in your internal controls, we have a responsibility to report to those, and they could rise to the level of a significant deficiency in internal controls, material weakness in internal controls, or the third level, which is kind of an agreed upon condition. And so I'm pleased to report that we did not identify any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in your internal controls. So again, congratulations on that fact, but we do issue agreed upon conditions. And these, again, are items that we bring to your attention that had no impact on your financial statements, your financial reporting, or any of our reports or deliverables. But nonetheless, you know, part of the reasons why you engage us is if we can see if, you know, ways that you can improve efficiencies or shore up any minor items in your control policies and procedures, we will certainly bring those to your attention. We develop our understanding of any issues. We discuss it at length with the appropriate levels of your management, come to a consensus that items will be included in reports. We identify and explain the issue. We make a recommendation for improvement and ask management to respond in kind in regards to their evaluation and or agreement with the finding and the recommendation and what appropriate action they will or have taken to correct the comment, if you will. And in that spirit, we have certainly an obligation to review any prior year findings to make sure that what was discussed was in fact implemented and that we do not have any repetitive findings. So with kind of that background, what I am pleased to report is that we had no agreed upon conditions issued in the current year audit. So congratulations on that. That doesn't happen all the time. So whatever you're doing well. And the three items that we did bring to your attention last year, we reviewed those for, you know, updating in regards to our understanding and what corrective action had in fact taken place. And I'm pleased to report that those were all cleared and that we did not have any repeat findings. So before I move on to open it up for any further questions or comments, you know, again, certainly COVID threw us a curveball, as I said at the outset. I'm really pleased that our firm had made the investment in technology that we have over the last several years, so that even though we were an essential business pursuant to the directives, approximately 90 to 95% of our people were working remote during the shutdown or shut-in, if you will. And we're very glad that we didn't have any major hiccups from our technological perspective or standpoint, but we couldn't have used that technology and conducted our audit without, again, Henry and Gail rising to the occasion, but also your IT department, you know, was certainly instrumental in making sure that we had security protocols, number one, but that we had the access that we needed in order for us to complete the engagement. So I just want to thank all members of the staff, particularly Henry Gale and the IT department for helping us accomplish the job and get it done on time. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions or comments that the board may have.
Any questions or comments for Brown Armstrong? Did someone jump on?
Yeah, it sounds redundant to say this, and I apologize, but this is such an extremely thorough process that Brown Armstrong goes through. And with the added curves thrown this year, I'm just amazed at how well this thing has gone and how clean it is. And, you know, people, I think, expect these reports to be clean, but they also assume that they'll be finding some Easter eggs along the way. And I'm very pleased and proud for Gail and Henry and the staff, and appreciate their efforts along with Brown Armstrong's. I think it's a terrific report.
Thank you, Jerry. Any other questions or comments? Okay, I'm not seeing any.
Todd, I just had one quick thing I wanted to mention.
Okay, Gail.
In the board packet, you also have a copy of the 2019 CAFR, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. This will be posted on the CICERA website shortly. But we thought we would provide you with a copy of that prior to going on the website and prior to being submitted to the GFOA for award submission. So I just wanted to mention that. And also big kudos to our communications coordinator, Shannon Goss, who's done a phenomenal job on the design of the CAFR as she has in past years as well. But she has also been working remotely with Henry and his team on creating this document. So thank you to them.
Hey, Todd.
Yes, Scott.
Scott here. Question for Dale. I read the CAFR as part of the audit report, but I thought in prior years we independently had the CAFR on our agenda with a separate presentation of it before it went public. And I feel like this was sort of an oh, by the way, because it came to the audit report. But in prior years, don't we receive the CAFR and actually talk about it?
Not in the last few years have we done that. It is something, you know, if the board would like to see that as a separate discussion item or presentation item, we can do that in the future. But that's not something that we've done, I know, at least in the last few years.
Okay, I need to check my memory and its shortcomings, because I thought that was SOP in prior years. Because I saw Tim's note that he had signed the investment side note, you know, the cover note and introduction to that section on May 12th. And I thought, wow, did I miss it in the May meeting that we went over this? And I went back and looked, and of course I didn't. But anyway, it was just a thought. It's a pretty important document for us.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that.
Thank you, Scott. Any other questions or comments? Okay, not hearing any. I'll just throw in my two cents like I do every year. I'm always impressed with the CAFR that Sisera produces, and all those involved should be very proud of their efforts. So thank you. And Andy and Brooke, thank you very much. Appreciate the presentation and all your work on our audit.
Yes, thank you very much. And you all enjoy the rest of your meeting and the rest of your day. And thank you, as always, for putting your faith in Brown Armstrong. We respect that and greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andy.
Great. Thank you. Take care.
You too.